Shaw, what's up, bros? You're listening to, like, an episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast. Hey! Everybody, it's episode number 281 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast. I am your temporary host, Bri. Benjamin is elsewhere today, still possibly lost in the cosmos or possibly lost in a department in Walmart. We're not entirely sure. We're getting people to look into it. Who, you may ask? Well, top men are looking into it. That's who we got. And John, I think he fell under the category of top men, so we sent him out to look for him as well. We haven't heard from him, but we're gonna hopefully keep you updated on that. In the meantime, it's just myself and the guy with all the anger from New York City, probably because he lives there. It's Taser. Taser, welcome back to the show.
Huh? Where am I? Who is this? Who are you? Why am I in this box? Ah!
Taser, it's okay. It's okay, Taser. It's okay. We're talking about comic books and shit. No, it's okay. You okay? Okay, cool. All right. So, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast. We are the podcast that takes a look of everything the Marvel Universe can put out there. Comic books, TV shows, movies, pornography, toys, you name it, we've probably touched upon it. And yeah, it's kind of a light show, just me and Taser pulling double duty, but I'll tell you what, we got a jam-packed show for you. So let's dig in, I guess. Starting at the top of the gate, I know we talked about it last week, but we're going to have to talk about it again. It's the ongoing controversy with James Gunn. James Gunn, brief refresher course. James Gunn was fired from Disney for illicit tweets he made and then apologized for like a decade ago or something to that account. And there has been a consistent online movement to get James Gunn rehired to the project. Disney and Marvel have allegedly, you know, they've been staying mum on the topic, but allegedly they're standing firm on not rehiring James Gunn. So much so that production of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which was originally scheduled to be released in the year 2020, I believe, as part of Phase 4, has been put on hold indefinitely until they can sort this whole matter out. And possibly unrelated, maybe not, but there's been rumors swirling that Taika Waititi, who was the director of the Thor Ragnarok film, has been meeting with Marvel in talks to take over a secret project. Ooh.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah. But on top of all of that, there has been some conflicting reports swirling around that perhaps Disney and Marvel are claiming they didn't know anything about
the
illicit tweets, which, yeah, that's really kind of fucking hard to believe considering they made such a big stink about it, or other people made such a big stink about it such a long, a reasonably long time ago. But yeah, so that's just kind of what we're touching upon right now. Our continuing and ongoing coverage, we'll let you know how it resolves, hopefully with James Gunn being rehired. I mean, Jesus Christ, the guy deserves it. Hashtag rehire James Gunn. Hashtag James Gunn was robbed. But yeah, I mean, Jesus, I mean, I've been monitoring it. I've been on Twitter. This has probably been one of the things that's kept me on Twitter most consistently as of late. So, you know, I've been following it, and everybody and their mother is posting think pieces, and trying to vocalize their support or, you know, saying like, no, he doesn't need it. You know, he's fine. But I think it becomes less and less about, you know, the tweets and more about rehiring James Gunn just based on the principle of the matter. You know, it's if you don't rehire him, you're still kowtowing to neo-Nazis. And you know, Disney, like I said, they're allegedly standing firm. There was a report that they said they would not rehire him. However, that was an unconfirmed source. But so far, it seems to be kind of true to the case. You know, Disney hasn't made any official comment on the rehiring of James Gunn or what have you. they may just be that they got duped and they don't want to admit their mistake and rehire him. I honestly don't know. But yeah, it's still a shitty situation. That much hasn't changed since the last time we spoke about it.
Douchebags!
Yeah, yeah. Taser, you want to go ahead and just express your thoughts on the matter?
Look, this is a simple matter. Admit that you overreacted. You got shook because somebody went and exposed something that y'all tried to keep on the low-low. And go, well, you know what? We fucked up, but he's done good work for us. We haven't had any problems. Hey, welcome back into the fold. Then do that. That's all you have to do. You know, you could admit when you're wrong. A grown-up admits when they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
A multinational company should be able to admit when they overreact to something. But that's not going to happen. You know why? Because Disney doesn't admit when it's wrong. Unless they can't scrub the blood from the ride fast enough. Okay, that's the only time they don't admit to being in error. So, yeah. What they did to James Gunn was wrong. I mean, there's just no other way around it. It was wrong, you know? And to take and double down and go, no, we've made our decision. We're going to stand behind it. Fuck you. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Fuck you. You know, I hope James Gunn gets picked up by, who's bigger than Disney?
Warner Brothers.
Are they bigger than Disney?
They're probably one of the last few legit competitors after Fox sold out to them.
Yeah,
so I would throw Warner Brothers out
okay.
there.
So, yeah,
not
so
like there's a shortage of material there for him to do, you know?
True it, and he could go over there and make a Doom Patrol, the movie, all quirky and fun and stuff.
Taser.
Huh?
Taser.
Huh?
They're making a Doom Patrol TV series on the DC app.
Damn it.
Sorry, pal.
Okay, how about the Superman family movie where you have Superman, Superboy, Supergirl, and then past stories with Super Baby? Yeah, you do that. And the Adventures of Lois Lane without Superman. Yeah.
Taser.
Yes.
Taser. They kind of already do that on Supergirl. On
Damn it! Okay. How about this? They do Titans the movie.
They're doing a TV show about the Titans on the DC app, Taser.
Damn
they're
it!
Doing all these projects already. Okay.
Damn it!
Moving off of that, in addition to that, actually, there have been additional reports that have been going around. There hasn't really been any article done about them yet because it is fairly recent. However, there have been reports that Cernovich reached out to Disney to let them know about this, not only telling them about the tweets, but also implied that there may be actual legal charges pending on his end against James Gunn and possibly Disney or whatever, which I don't really know how that would have worked. In fact, one of the most vocal supporters of the rehire James Gunn movement is a guy on Twitter named Bob Chipman. He's Movie Bob. He's a big movie guy on YouTube. And he basically made the case, and it makes sense, that it would basically be considered fraud and legally actionable. So not only could you conceivably rehire James Gunn, you could also sue the person, and you could be like, well, they misled us, and they said they were going to sue, so now we're suing them. And James Gunn, come over here, buddy, and smile at the podium with us. You know, come over here and smile. We're talking now. We're best friends again, right? Right? Tell the good people, James. And James would just be like, yeah, we're friends again. Can I go make my movie? And they'll be like, yeah, James. Yeah, go make your movie. And that would be that. That would literally be all that that is.
I would love for that to happen.
I would really
love for that to happen.
I really hope it works out. We'll see what happens. But like I said, this is an ongoing thing. This isn't going to be resolved by a little wrap-up thing by us here at the end. So we'll just say we'll keep you updated and we'll move on from there. But from now on, from going forward, just keep on making your presence known if you support James Gunn. Hashtag rehire James Gunn on Twitter. Hashtag James Gunn was robbed. Although I think Taser uses a different spelling than most people would for that hashtag. So
yes,
you want to go ahead?
I am elite. I use a U and a Z.
Oh, yeah. You speak elite.
I'm elite. Yeah.
What up? All right, then. Moving on to some more lighthearted fare, some entertainment news. Taser, did you know that the beginning, typically, of any new year, the first 2 or 3 months are considered award season in the entertainment industry? Did you know that?
No, I had no idea. Please, fantastic. Inform me of that.
What a convenient fact you did not know. Hey, the 2019 Oscars are going to be being put together soon. And here's the thing. Black Panther should win Best Picture. I'm gonna preface this story with that statement right there. I think so. Taser, do you think so or do you not think so?
Hell no.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, fair enough. Moving on. So there's been, obviously, since the movie debuted, it narrowly missed the window for consideration last year. So this will be the first year it's up for actual consideration for an award. And there's been a strong campaign by Marvel, as well as the fan community, to get Black Panther recognized and win Best Picture, or at least have it nominated, be in the same category as some great films that have come out. It doesn't seem like it'll go that way, if only because of what the Academy has decided to do. The Academy, Motion Picture Sciences and Motion Picture, whatever they decide to call themselves. I honestly don't know what the acronym is. It's whatever. They are introducing a brand new category in this year's Oscars, coincidentally, called Best Popular Movie. And it is a category meant to reflect the popular tastes and trends of the time and award more contemporary films their due rather than your art house picks like The Artist, which won several years ago, which was a black and white silent film that nobody remembers. Or what won last year, which was what won last year? I think.
Is it? No idea. I don't pay attention to award shows.
Okay. Well, that tells you pretty much everything you need to know about the place the Oscars hold in the popular consciousness. But that being said, everyone's saying that this new move is a way to get Black Panther a Best Picture award, but at the same time, not give it the Best Picture award that they think it's due. They think it's kind of like we're not going to give it the real award, but we'll give it this kind of popular award, kind of putting an asterisk, you know, next to the award title or whatever. And that's kind of what the idea is, that they knew Black Panther would have a popular fan movement, so they decided to give them something to try and placate them. I mean, I don't know how much that holds, but look, the Oscars never get it right long term. They never do. Never in a million. They don't. Okay? They don't get it right ever long term. They don't. I swear to God. I'm gonna do something real quick. I'm gonna try to bring up a list of the Academy Award winners that won Best Film, but suffice to say, most of the ones that win Best Film in any given year are usually forgotten by the next year or the year after that.
And you know why? Because they're not Star Wars.
Yeah, they're not Star Wars.
Star Wars 4, 5, 6, 3, 2 actually 4, 5, 6, 2 and Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as I liked Force Awakens, yeah, I couldn't give that Best Movie, but I could give Rogue One. I could give Rogue One a shot at it. All of those deserve at least a nod, but they won't get it because, well, you know, it's silly fluff sci-fi.
Yeah.
I mean, for whatever reason, that genre is just going to get overlooked because it doesn't have the proper amount of emotional gravitas and, you know, there isn't a whole lot of melodramatic emoting.
Ooh. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, and like I said, they never get it right really long term. You know, for example, 2002, I do have a list now. I'm going to pick things up. Here's what we have. This is just from the decade prior to the 2010s, because that's how they break it down based on decade. So 2009's best film was The Hurt Locker, which you can now see cut up and shot to hell on FX or USA Network or whatever, you know, movie has that. Slumdog Millionaire, heralded as the coming of Bollywood to Hollywood. And I don't think that really ever held up. I don't think it did. No Country for Old Men won Best Picture in 2007, which was a good movie.
That was a good movie. But
I would also argue it was standard Coen brother fare, and it wasn't spectacular. Then again, other movies that year included Juno.
I didn't see Juno.
and Michael Clayton, which is a forgettable, I think, George Clooney movie, I think. Mm. There was The Departed, which won the year before that, which I know Taser's the biggest fan of that movie. And that was the one that allegedly started the big trend of movies set in Boston. That was the one with Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio, and it was directed by Scorsese. See, this is exactly what I'm talking about, though. And before we get back on track, the year before that, 2005, Crash won Best Picture. So do you even know what Crash?
Yeah, I saw Crash. Crash was funny.
Yeah, look. They never get it right long term. If you look at the like any decade, 70s, 80s, 90s, even the 60s to a degree, they never get right long term the tastes and trends of people in the real world. You know, they pick art house movies or, you know, craft movies or whatever the fuck you want to call it. They don't pick the ones that people really remember. You
like
know?
The Toxic Avenger. The Toxic Avenger deserves Best Movie nomination.
I doubt it, but sure. And, you know, if you have to create a whole other category, because here's the thing, I have a feeling they're just going to be doubly wrong moving forward. I do believe Black Panther was an achievement. At least that's what Black Twitter and Black you're the inside man in that regard, I think.
Myself,
I don't know what they told
Arnold.
You, but to me, yes, yeah, you and Arnold, I guess, are on the same boat. To me, at least, though, I do recognize what an achievement it is and what it would what it represents more than anything else. You know, it was a Marvel movie, but what it represents, I think, is more important, you know, and maybe that's the place for it at the Oscars, where, you know, the awards are mostly symbolic for what they achieve or, you know, what I don't know. I'm rambling now. Taser, you take over. What do you think?
OK, but if we're talking about what the movies represent, then as far as I know, Black Panther represented a comic book movie.
Okay. Elaborate.
It was the first comic book movie that had a hero from the continent of Africa, from the fictional country of Wakanda, that didn't take place mostly outside of its borders. I'm just saying.
Lest we forget White Hate and Coon of the 1990s, written by Hooper X, who is just an amazing man, I think, and a true trailblazer in that regard.
Well,
I mean,
it's not like Black Panther was the first black superhero movie, because you know there was Meteor Man with Robert Townsend.
Oh shit! He dropped the Meteor Man.
And there was that one with Damon Wayans, where he was the geek, and David Alan Greer was his friend who wasn't a geek, and they
Shit,
were
David Alan Greer.
Yeah, David Alan Greer.
As a kid?
Yeah. No. it wasn't that long ago, but no, they
I was
were
gonna
superheroes.
Say I only know him as an old dude. So
fair enough, but no, this is after In Living Color. After Living Color was over, the two of them, they did a hero movie where Damon Wayans was a spaz who had a gimmick, like gimmick toys and such. So figure Batman, but a doofus. And David Alan Greer was his guy who, he's getting his head slapped around. Let me go stop these guys and I'll kick some butt. So, you know, they were the dynamic duo of not Brooklyn, but kind of Brooklyn. And there was also Steel. Steel. Yeah.
The Shaq movie?
Yeah.
Remember when Shaq had a movie career, man?
No, I don't. And I blissfully ignored that segment of the 90s because there's a good reason for that.
Fair enough.
Anyway, no. And no, Blade doesn't count. Blade doesn't count at all. Blade didn't help, you know, actually bringing Marvel to the movies and people interested in Marvel properties. Nah, Blade didn't do that at all.
That's not Blade's fault. That's the world's fault. Because Blade is an epic movie.
The hell with the world! The world should burn! Blade was awesome. Anyway.
Yeah, after this, Steven Dorff's going to go fuck humanity as a blood tornado. It's going to be
great.
You know,
I would watch that. I'm just putting it out there. But no, I'm just saying, though, Black Panther was a pretty good superhero movie.
Yeah.
That made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was groundbreaking in that it had a whole lot more Nubian involvement than most of them had done previously. And it made mm-hmm. a lot of money. And that's about as far as it goes. Black Panther did not revolutionize film. Black Panther did not make black people come together in blackness, except on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, there was nothing special about Black Panther. So, yes, it made a lot of money, and yes, it was a very good film because I enjoyed the fuck out of it. I saw it more than once, and that's saying something. I paid for it more than once. But other
Fair
than
enough.
That, no, it wasn't the greatest movie ever, and I would not give it best movie of what year was it? It was this year, right?
2018. Well, it'll be airing in 2019, but it's for okay. the last year. So
whatever year that it runs, depending on what it runs up against, I can see, you know, based on the whatever competition it goes up against, I could see giving it the nod, or I can see going, nope, fuck you, and putting that whatever they, you know, statue they decide to give it to, you know, somewhere else. But, you know, I hate to be the guy that says it, but Black Panther wasn't that special. It wasn't. Do you hear me out there?
Yeah, I hear you.
It wasn't that special.
I just don't know if I should be taking you seriously. Black Twitter and Black Tumblr and all that shit has told me not to take people who say that kind of thing seriously.
There's a Black Tumblr? I might need to find that.
They're the ones who...
Black Twitter, but Black Tumblr, that's new.
They're the ones who got really, really up and at it when Black Hogwarts was a trending hashtag. So that's fun. You should ask Arnold about it. He'll send you some links to some stuff. I think he saved a few. So
okay, I'll send him a private tell on Facebook. I can't wait to
Fair
see
enough.
What he comes up with.
Oh, yeah. So, moving right along. I wanted to touch briefly upon this. It has something that kind of slipped our notice, mostly because we don't feel we should give their movement any sort of legitimate attention. But considering how shitty it got in the last week, I feel like it should be noted. There is a movement called Comicsgate, which, by the way... As
they put
society,
gates on comics? Oh my god! How did
just
stop people from reading them? That's not fair!
Oh my god. Look, Taser, I understand what you're going for, but honestly, coming from myself, as a society, can we agree to stop putting the gate suffix on proposed scandals and movements and all this other bullshit? Watergate was Watergate because that was the name of the hotel. Gate doesn't mean anything to any... Never mind. Anyway, so Comicsgate is a movement of right-wing writers, artists, creators, most notably, I think, featuring Ethan Van Sciver, who is notably right-wing in his beliefs. And they are against the quote-unquote forced diversification of the comic book industry. And in a recent YouTube video, an interview with a creator who is supporting the movement, he argued that Darwin Cook would be a supporter of their movement.
Oh, he was that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The late, great Darwin Cook, who wrote and illustrated DC's New Frontier, also did Catwoman, Selena's Big Score. He did the Parker novel adaptations for IDW. He's done an immense breadth of work for no shortage of, like, I think he just really never worked for Marvel, I think. Can't remember if he ever did. He was a big DC guy, and he worked on the indie circuit too, but I don't think he ever did work for Marvel, or at least nothing substantial. But regardless of any of that, when Darwin Cook passed away unexpectedly, it was a couple years ago, I think, at this point, you know, everybody was brokenhearted. I think he died of cancer, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
And yeah, so this guy comes on, and I forget who said it himself. I'm going to try and look that up while I'm at it. But there was a YouTube video done where they're talking about the Comicsgate movement, and they're discussing how they believe Darwin Cook would have been a supporter of their movement. Now, this should tell you everything about how Twitter and how Twitter works and how shitty people are. Marcia Cook, who is Darwin Cook's widow, reactivated her Twitter account because it was deactivated before she saw the video. And she reactivated it and chimed in when they posted the interview on you know, on Twitter, and they started getting around. And just for reference, the comic book creator who mentioned Darwin Cook is named Billy Tucci, T-U-C-C-I. And yeah, so she chimes in saying, "This is Darwin's wife, and I can guarantee that he thought you Comicsgate idiots would be a bunch of crybaby losers ruining comics, because you are." We don't deserve Marsha Cook. She's a stand-up gal. And because it's how Twitter works, she was immediately bombarded with harassing tweets saying that, "Oh, you can report this. I think, you know, like, this isn't appropriate. What do you know? You know, I'm weaponizing my Twitter account against you." They called her a piece of garbage. Someone argued that Darwin Cook probably killed himself to get away from her.
Oh, that's
yeah. And so it got really, really nasty. And finally, a couple of bigger name creators in the current day stepped in, that being Jeff Lemire, who is more present day, I guess, and Bill Sienkiewicz, whose work is more in the 80s and the 70s, I guess. But he himself is a legend in the community, you know, if more of an underground type thing. He did a lot more obscure stuff, I think. I know he did a run on Moon Knight for a while. That's what I know him from. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, so it's basically just mudslinging, and there's no legitimacy to this movement at all. But Jeff Lemire and Bill Sienkiewicz came to Marsha Cook's defense. And I feel like we should at least offer the same from our own little corner of the interwebs, because what they did in response to that is reprehensible. Harassing a widow, insinuating he killed himself to get away from her—that's
that is
I want to
go ahead.
Yeah, I want to be surprised, but I'm not, because humanity is disgusting, and Ultron was probably right, or Magneto, or Doctor Doom, or whomever it was advocating for the destruction of certain groups of people. But I just wanted to say on a personal level that I think Comicsgate is a laughable thing. You know, just because because it's in direct response to the comic book community, the diversity therein being recognized and people being able to see themselves and other characters and stuff on the screen. It's not forced diversification. That's the thing. They're making it a political thing, you know, and maybe there is some of that. White people have run comic books forever, basically.
White people didn't run Milestone.
That's true.
And white people didn't run Antarctic Press.
Antarctic
Press. Ben Dunn.
Never heard
of him. Ben Dunn is Asian. He did a Ninja High School.
I don't know who that is. But for the majority... Yeah, okay. The most recognizable characters and creators have most often been white people, you know. And I don't know. I'm a white guy, so I don't feel like I'm really qualified to comment on the whole thing. I will say that Comicsgate, I don't think, has any legitimacy, and they're laughable, and they're a bunch of crybaby losers, to quote the late, you know, the great Marsha Cook. But I guess, Taser, if you want to weigh in on this, just even on a personal note or however you feel appropriate, just go ahead. So, you know.
I don't approve of going after the man's widow and saying shit that, well, you're probably the reason why he's dead and all that other stuff. But I don't begrudge them the argument, because while I'm not against exploring different stories, I'm not against, you know, women in comics, I'm not against updating how we do things in comics, I will say that Jane Foster as Thor was both an interesting and frustrating experience. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that A-Force had been a better success. I wish that America, I don't think her book survived. I think her book died.
America Chavez?
Yeah.
I don't think she ever had an ongoing book. She was mostly a team player. She was on Young Avengers.
She had a solo run, though. I don't know. I think that book died, you know?
Okay.
But either way, I wish that more female characters in comics had more books, and I also wish that more females read comics, because then we wouldn't have to have social experiments, and I'll call it a social experiment. Social experiments like Jane Foster becoming Thor. Okay, I don't agree with Ethan Van Sciver and all of those guys, you know, moaning and crying about, well, you know, women in comics and blah, blah, blah. But I will say, looking at how Marvel has dealt with what they're trying to do in order to be more diversified. Oh, Riri from Iron Man. Killing off Moon Boy and giving us Moon Girl. You know, I mean, these are just some things I'm just looking at and going, but why? But why? Well, Riri, I can get. I can kind of dig that, although we had her and we also had Dr. Doom as the Infernal Iron Man or whatever the fuck. So I, you know, just whatever. But my problem is when you take the hero that I'm here to read about and then you do something else with them and then you give me this substitute like Captain America, you know? Or in Riri's case, Iron Man, but that was part of a whole larger thing, so that's not really her fault. And Jane Foster as Thor, and making Thor the unworthy, like, you know, and you're swapping out, you know, the female for the male lead that you've known and loved for years. I get that argument, because that's kind of what it feels like. But I don't agree that, I don't agree with, you know, having, you know, no women or less women in comics. Mm-hmm. It's you go about it. How Marvel goes about it is what I take umbrage with. I mean, hell, I still have problems with Hickman's Secret Wars because, well, you know, if you've listened to the show, you know how much I fucking hated that book. So it's how they went about it that I can kind of agree with, at least in that argument. I don't agree with how you deal with people who don't take it as an issue. You know, like Cook's widow. And all the woman said was that, no, you're wrong. My husband would not have supported you. And yeah, she called them crybaby, whatever the fucks.
You know? I mean, to be fair, their record of you know, their record of how they've conducted themselves kind of paints them as such.
But
you know?
That's Twitter. Everybody on either side of any argument is going to have douchebags. I mean, let's be real here. You know, you can be a leftist, you can be the most progressive person on the planet, and spew out just as much toxicity in the defense of whatever your position is, just as much as some, you know, right-wing racist, you know, bumfuck from Tuscaloosa. You know, it doesn't. There's no separation there. It's called asshole. Every side has an asshole. You know, and we can't get away from that because that's just humanity. But I disagree with how they went after her. I 100% disagree with that. You know, if you want to call her, if you want to say she's wrong, she's wrong. Most of it, I think, is probably reacting to the fact that she called them crybabies, in which
case, yeah,
you know, okay, yeah, you know, I mean, that's kind of, yeah, okay, well, you know, you're kind of doing that. If she just said, and let's be real here, if she'd have just said, I disagree with you, and I know my husband better than any of you, he would not have agreed with you 100%. You know, I mean, that's really all she had to say. And
hey, just because she put a little flavor on it doesn't mean you got to hold it against her. That's all I'm saying.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, you should be able to disagree with somebody without having to take and dig into the sewer and pulling up some, like, ridiculous, hateful shit. I mean, but see, that's the problem with Twitter, you know? Because as soon as somebody comes up with something that you disagree with, it's like, man the torpedo stations! You know, and, you know, like, damn.
All right, look, I mean, wrapping up, final thoughts on this, I mean, you know,
agree.
This went different way than I expected.
No, I agree somewhat with their argument, but I completely disagree with how they went about defending it. I completely disagree with it. There's no call for there's no need for it. No, not at all. And, you know, fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them all. They're dumbasses.
Fuck them all. Awesome. Hey, moving right along.
If only we could make that the show title.
That's definitely not chill, bruh. All right? We got to get to the chill part of the show.
True that, true that.
We'll be wrapping up the news segment with a slew of announcements, just some things we're hitting upon briefly. To start at the top, Marvel Comics will be celebrating its 80th anniversary. I believe that's coming up. Oh, God, I really should have said when it was coming up. But regardless, they're going to be releasing a monthly 8-volume series, one for every decade, with quote-unquote commentary tracing the history of the company in context of the pop culture and political events from the time. It'll mainly revolve around, reprints of classic stories, probably stuff that maybe hasn't been seen in a while, as well as, you know, probably liner notes and some additional material thrown in there for good measure. They've announced the first 4 volumes, which is going to be Marvel in the 40s, The Human Torch versus the Submariner, Marvel in the 50s, Captain America Strikes, Marvel in the 60s, Spider-Man Meets the Marvel Universe, and Marvel in the 70s, Legion of Monsters. And, you know, just based on the names of these, you can kind of see they're moving to kind of reflect where the comics was at, which I didn't realize the 70s of Marvel was such a low point that they have to go to Legion of Monsters primarily for that sort of thing. I would have thought you would have leaned more on even just what Spider-Man was doing. Spider-Man was, I thought, active in the 70s, wasn't he? Well,
yeah, he was. And what's weird is that it was, I'd say the mid to late 60s where you actually started seeing Marvel push up into the top 10, because for at least a solid decade or more, it was pretty much DC and in that regard also pretty much Superman shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, by the time, you know, we get Doctor Strange, we get Spider-Man, we get the Fantastic Four and all of that other stuff, and especially with Spider-Man, you start seeing the sales start reflecting more Marvel. And by the mid-70s, I haven't seen any sales reflected from most of that time period except for the very early 70s. But by the 70s, I figured it would have kind of been held maybe a little leaning more towards Marvel, but not anything that was bad, you know? But then again, you know, look at the early 80s. You know, fucking Teen Titans right out the back when they did the revamp, and boom, you know? X-Men were going strong then, but Teen Titans was like, get the fuck out. You know, so I don't know. Maybe there's something to that.
I hear you. And that'll be starting next year, which will be the 80th anniversary of Marvel Comics number 1.
Are they going to call it Timely Comics? Because that's what they were called back then. You know,
they're going to stick to the Marvel Comics.
Liars! Branding. Liars! Just saying.
Liars. Fair enough. If you have complaints, hit up CB Cebulski on Marvel Twitter. I'm sure he'll be happy to complain, or hear your complaints, rather.
Oh, yeah, because that's what Twitter's all for, complaints.
Absolutely. Moving right along, not so much an announcement, but a special notation. September's Champions issue number 24 will be a special PSA issue dedicated to the issue of gun violence in schools, and we'll focus on Miles Morales, a.k.a.
Yay,
Spider-Man.
Woo, yay.
What is your take on PSA comics, Taser?
I hate them. I
hate
them. Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up with watching them on TV and being forced to watch them for school. Being forced to watch them for school. And then I remember I also came up during the Saved by the Bell days, and Saved by the Bell was one big PSA. Except for when Zach was involved, because Zach got away with everything and maybe got a slap on the wrist every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of PSAs because they tell stories that, you know, kids should know anyway. And the kids that don't know the stories that they tell are the kids that ain't got parents or they got really shitty parents. You know,
right.
I refuse to believe that there's that many shitty parents out there. And that means that they're poisoning my TV with their PSAs for these fucking kids with shitty parents. So, yeah, fuck PSAs. I'm selfish.
Fair enough. That will be coming out next month. Maybe someone will review it when it comes out. I don't know. It's probably not going to be me.
Well, definitely not be me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. If only we could get more of those Batman landmine PSA comic books, that would be super dope. Kids, don't go near landmines. That's a bad thing. Okay, on to some more straight announcements. A new Conan the Barbarian series has been announced to be coming from Marvel. Are you singing the score to Conan right now? That's pretty chill, bruh. It's pretty chill. That will be coming at the hands of Jason Aaron, who I don't think you could pick a better guy. I mean, if you translate some of what he did with Thor, God of Thunder into Conan the Barbarian, you'll have a pretty hot series on your hands, I think. So, you know, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. It'll be interior art done by Mahmoud Azrar, who is most known probably for all new X-Men. He's been going on that. That'll hit shelves in January of 2019. And something else, I didn't know his rights were originally owned by Marvel. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. During the 70s and 80s, you had the Conan comic, and then you had, what was it, Savage Conan and another book that were both, I forgot what the term was, but they were black and white and large print format. They were magazines, basically.
Ooh, I do like that.
If you ever head to a legit comic book store, or better yet, go to a convention.
I do go to a legit comic book store, sir.
I thought you did what most people and just go to like the newsstand.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry.
The newsstand.
What? That's how I used to get my comics before I found a comic book store.
Newsstands don't exist anymore, Taser.
Hey, I originally used to get my comic books from the supermarket. Okay, so that tells you something.
Fair enough.
But no, these books, they were black and white. The pages weren't color, it was in black and white, and they were large format, about the size of like People or Newsweek or whatever the fuck, except maybe a little wider. And they were maybe a dollar. They were definitely way more than a comic sold, but it went on for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you know who is a big fan of doing that, revitalizing it in the magazine format, is Ed Brubaker. A lot of his indie stuff, when he launches a new series, when he'll do a new series, at least the number one he'll usually do in a variant magazine format. He did it for Killer Be Killed. He did it for his Criminal Annuals issues he kind of did a little while back. He did it for, he's done it for a few of his series. He's a fan of that, and I actually really enjoy it as well. I almost wish more people did it that way, but, you know. C'est la vie. Time, a relic of a time gone by, I guess. So, but that being said, I didn't know that, but I learned something new today. So isn't that fun? Marvel has announced the coming of a new Defenders series after the most recent one, which features the Netflix Defender lineup of Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. That's going to be wrapping up. And
thank you, guys.
They're going to be launching a brand new series centered around the original Defenders lineup. The Hulk, Doctor Strange, Silver Surfer, and Namor the Submariner.
Woo!
Yep, they're going to be four specific one-shots, each one titled The Best Defender, and each one profiling a different member of the Defenders crew. After which, the series will dovetail into a single ongoing series called The Defenders, The Best Defense, a book written by Al Ewing, who is currently on Immortal Hulk, and to be illustrated by Joe Bennett. So that's going to be coming out. Now, are you a fan of the original Defenders, Taser, by any stretch?
Yes and no. In that the team doesn't work as a team would typically do so, mostly because you have Hulk and you have Namor. Those two, personality-wise, In regards to everybody else there, that's just like one big kettle of holy shit. How do I hold on to this and keep it from exploding? You know?
Right.
But we're talking a team with Namor, Hulk, Doctor Strange. I mean, how can you not just look at that and go, ooh? So I like the idea of it, but I know that the way the personalities play off each other, especially with Namor. And if we're talking Namor now, not Namor then, Namor now has the whole, Well, yeah, I watched over Wakanda, and I got left
then
on a planet to die in another universe, and
I joined the Cabal.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
I tried to get it in with Emma Frost. I joined the X-Men for a little while. It's been a crazy wild ride, you know. And I'll be interested to see, because depending on how the story is framed, right now they're dealing with the immortal Hulk, who, if you haven't read the story, the Hulk basically kind of comes out at night now, and he's a straight-up murderer. He murders bad people. And I don't know how that's going to play out. That'll
so he's
be interesting.
Punisher with powers.
Kind of. They're super-powered threats. They're not like, you know, it's not as like I'm making it sound. But I like Al Ewing. I think he's a good writer, so I might check it out. I've always been fascinated by the Defenders because they always seem like a team that shouldn't on paper work, like you were saying. They were never the first people you would – they were almost the team where if you wanted to do a fantasy team of people who could kick anybody's ass, this team conceivably could do it. Because
right.
You have the Sorcerer Supreme, the guy who wields the power Cosmic, Namor, who is essentially Superman, and the Hulk, who is the Hulk. And this team is – if someone tried to put this team over, it'd be like, OP, it's too OP, you know? It'd be like, it wouldn't work. But, again, like you're saying, the detraction there is that they shouldn't conceivably work as a team, and they really don't, you know? I remember back after Fear itself shortly ended, they tried to reboot the Defenders with an all-new, all-different lineup. Although Doctor Strange was there, it also featured the likes of Iron Fist, who I always felt would have been a good fit for the team, just because of how weird he is.
Uh-huh.
And Red She-Hulk, which was Betty Ross at the time. That was a whole thing that was happening.
Wow. Okay. I wasn't aware that they had done a version with her. That's actually news to me. Okay.
Yeah. Iggy reviewed the first couple issues way, way back in the day, but it didn't last a year, I don't think. It wasn't very well received. C'est la vie.
I hate to say this, but as much as you like the sound of a team called the Defenders, I don't think the idea actually works, which is kind of sad because, you know, Defenders plays off the Avengers, but you already have the Avengers. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's almost like the Avengers would be more the Defender name, and the Defenders would be more the Avengers.
You
especially
know,
with like Imperius Rex and all that crap, but so yeah, that's going to be coming out. They haven't announced a specific release date yet. However, they did start teasing an eventual beginning of the release schedule in December of this year. So we'll see. And one more before we get started, but you'll excuse me for 1 minute, Taser. I need something to get through this one. Okay, there we go.
Beer. No, kids, it's soda pop. Soda pop.
Mexican soda pop, and it's in an aluminum bottle.
Cervezas, sí.
So, they're doing another dead old man Logan thing.
Yay.
Oh, good God. Yeah, hang on 1 second. I'm going, Okay, cool. So, they're going to be announcing a new series. It's a mini series, 12 issues, good God, called Dead Man Logan. And supposedly, it is going to cap off all the old man Logan stuff happening. Because, you know, you recall back in Secret Wars, he had a mini series there, and then he got ported over into the real world. He's kind of been mulling around ever since. But this one is going to see this version of Logan, old man Logan, travel back to his original home, Earth, universe, dimension, however you want to characterize it, with the express intent of wanting to kill Mysterio, which, if you read the original series, Mysterio is the one who took Wolverine out of commission. He was the only one they dispatched.
That's actually surprising. I mean, we're talking fucking Mysterio here.
Yeah. Basically, what he did was he put a whammy on Logan where Logan saw a bunch of villains streaming into the X-Mansion, killing all of his friends and people. And he popped his claws, and he is eviscerating people. He is swimming in the viscera by the end. And then when he finally puts down Bullseye, he realizes everything had been an illusion put together by Mysterio and that he was really killing all of the X-Men and all the mutants in the Xavier School. And there's a two-page spread done by Steve McNiven. It's one of the most beautifully gruesome pieces of art I've ever seen, where Wolverine just sees what he did, the bodies of his old friends strewn about, and it is hardcore gruesome. And that is what essentially kicks off the events. Logan renounces violence after that, refuses to pop his claws, and sort of is broken. You know, they can't really kill Wolverine, so they take him out that way. And Mysterio was the one who facilitated that. Now, I always assumed Wolverine was, or not Wolverine, I always assumed Mysterio was just dead. In the original Old Man Logan series and the stuff that they've expounded upon since then, they've never actually gone back to Mysterio or shown what he's been up to, or that Logan even tried to find him afterwards. They've never done that. So this is probably some of the last untouched territory you can really do with that universe while serving the original story. I mean, hang on one second. Okay. It's going to be written by Ed Brisson. Oh boy. Who did Iron Fist, among other things, and illustrated by Mike Henderson. Look, I've stated before, I never thought Old Man Logan should be one of the properties they just keep doing stuff with. He's had an ongoing series. They spun off Old Man Hawkeye, which is a travesty to comic books. And, you know, they've just basically kept using him. Because he was the convenient excuse when the original Logan died. Because then you had Logan kicking around, you know? And that's what that was. So, but your thoughts, Taser, briefly on the topic.
Sounds to me like Old Man Logan is Marvel's Watchmen. You know, it's a property that came out, made a whole lot of people go, "Wow, holy crap, that's something! Wow, take my money, please, thank you." And then they said, "Let's see if we could stretch this out some more." You know, and then comes along Hickman's Secret Wars, and, you know, they offed regular flavor Logan, and when everything gets rebooted, oh, look, Logan's back, but he's the old man version.
Yeah, he's like what Steve Rogers was when Steve Rogers lost his de-aging thing, and he aged up to be an old man again. That was kind of the role he was playing. There. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I'm flattered by you saying it's like the Watchmen of Marvel. I think that might be.
I don't mean it so far as the quality, just in that you're looking at something that, as far as I knew, had gotten quite a bit of accolades from readers in regards to, like, how interesting the story and how gripping it was.
Yeah.
And then them wanting to continue to milk it, which. To DC's credit, they waited a good 20-some-odd years before they did it, but it was always there in the background, like, hey, can we do it now? No! Okay, we're going to wait a little more. Can we do it now? No! Okay, we're going to wait a little more. Marvel just kind of went, I think they waited like maybe 2 or 3 years, and then it was like, okay, it's time to open the floodgates. Which, there's one thing I always wanted to ask. Mm-hmm. How old is Old Man Logan?
In this series, I mean, granted, you know, his age is something to be argued, but basically what they characterize him as is, I would say, probably late 50s, early 60s, I would say.
Okay.
That would be around where he'd be.
Considering how old he, saying he's about the same as 616 regular flavor Logan, flavor Logan is a buck 50 in the current Marvel, you know, Marvel universe.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, his hair, he wasn't anywhere near going gray. So for him to be, by his age, 50 years old, let's say that current Logan, before he died, would have been about 30. So they would have had to have been a solid 60 to 70 years, at least, that passed on.
Which, actually, that's actually the time frame they deal with. They say it's about 60 years removed from the fall of the hero.
Okay.
So I was actually going to see what you're building up to, but yeah, that's almost spot on.
All right.
The events of Old Man Logan takes place about 60
and
years.
And Hawkeye is still around then? Really?
I mean, he's definitely portrayed as way older. He's got glaucoma, arthritis, basically. He's kind of on his last legs.
He'd be 90-something. Does he look like he's in his 90s?
Well, no, because, see, here's the thing. They're using when because, see, here's the thing. First of all,
I'm gonna like
we could sit here all day trying to make diagrams and figure out how Marvel continuity works. We're never going to figure it out. Here's what I know. It was Mark Miller. So right there, you know,
right.
He's Michael Bay of the comics world. He does cool shit and makes things blow up and stuff. Hawkeye's background, or which version of the, like, where they move the story forward from in terms of the continuity of the Marvel Universe, they never really touch upon that. I will say that in the scenes they show in the X-Mansion, it's classic costume Jubilee, like from the X-Men animated series, and he's in his classic blue and yellow duds as well. So call it the 90s, okay. Maybe the late 90s, early 2000s, right. Something like that. But when they recently did Old Man Hawkeye, because I flipped through the flashback issue, you know, when I was in the comic store, just to see kind of what they did with the whole flashback sequence. Uh-huh. It was fucking awful. Do you know who? Jesus Christ! Do you know who they got to kill Thor?
Who?
The Absorbing Man.
That's not too unbelievable, considering he's a Thor villain. I mean, he was created by Amora.
Yeah, but by himself. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you know, well, I don't know exactly by what means he took to do it, but I being real, I can see Absorbing Man giving Thor a really decent fight. People will sell him short because, you know, Carl Creel, you know, tends to be a bit of a dullard, and you know you don't want to play up a dullard too much unless it's the Hulk. But
was it Absorbing Man? Oh jeez, I'm trying to see. Here's the thing. Hold on. Let me double, because I could be wrong here. Because now I'm thinking it's either him or Wrecker. I'm not sure which one it is.
Okay, Wrecker is bullshit. I mean, Wrecker is intelligent, but Wrecker is unless he comes up. Wrecker's a plotter. Wait. No, I'm thinking Thunderball. Wrecker's the one with the crowbar. Yeah, yes. Fuck you. No, I'm not buying that for a second. Although, okay. When he was created, he did go toe to toe with Thor at least that first time, and then Thor ended up beating him. But
let me just make sure. Let me see if I can figure out who exactly it was. Because they got, you know, you know what? Fuck it. Attack? I don't have time to waste around
okay,
this bullshit. Never mind. Moving.
I can see it if it was a sneak attack, but other than that, yeah, I wouldn't buy it. I'll put it like that.
Yeah. Anyway, moving along from that, because, you know, whatever. So they never expressly state at what point they move forward 60 years from, but it's seems to be around the classic iteration of the X-Men, so call it the 90s, maybe, you know? Okay. But yeah, regardless of any of that, this is supposed to be the end of the line, kind of, for the Old Man Logan story, because, you know, he's already old as balls, and this is almost kind of like that whole Armageddon vibe they were talking about, where he rides out and does one last thing, and it's the guy who basically ruined his life, so, you know, or just had a hand in it. So we'll see. That's going to be coming out. I just had the article up a second ago, and of course I closed out my browser window like an idiot. Oh, God. But, yeah, they're going to be releasing 12 issues. That seems like a bit much. I don't know if I would have gone 12 issues personally. But hey, that's just me.
To be fair, it might read better as a trade.
Probably.
You know? It might
yeah,
do that.
Especially, the original Old Man Logan would have worked better as a trade, because you had Mark Miller and Steve McNiven, both of whom are known for delays and stuff, and there was just no end to that. So, so that's going to be coming out in November, so you can look for first issue then. So, all right, that does it for the news. It was a lengthy news segment, but we're down two people, so we figured we could pad it out with some talk. And to be fair, I think we got some good discussion out of it. So that being said, let's move along. Our inglorious leader, Iggy, you know, he can't really send messages from the void, so we kind of had to pick up where he left off. So we're going to be taking over with an impromptu book of the week, which is The Punisher number one, written by Matthew Rosenberg. And in case you missed it, shit hit the fan while we were away. So let's dig in, because So this is still dealing with the fallout from Secret Empire, where, you know, Frank was a trigger man for the Hydra machine. He was like their, you know, wet work guy. And he kind of has a vendetta against Hydra since then. You know, he worked for Hydra. He was tricked into it. He's, you know, tried to use the War Machine armor to kill people. And, you know, that didn't quite work out. Iron Man kind of noticed that. So now he's on to, you know, just trying to get back to basics and bring it down, you know, crime, but he's definitely focused more on larger scale stuff. So basically where we begin is, you know, Frank is still kind of on his mission for atonement since then, you know, and he took down a corrupt dictator and sparked an international incident. I had to look some of this up because I didn't read the last series, but he used the War Machine armor to take down a corrupt dictator and spark an international incident, and then he focuses his sights on Baron Zemo. Baron Zemo is kind of the head of Hydra at this point, and he's the guy who Frank blames all of his bad stuff on, so he's going to go after him. We see Hydra gaining control of Begalia, one of those made-up, nations out there in the Marvel world.
Begalia. That sounds like...
I always wonder how much work they put into naming these fake countries, or if any at all goes into it. It's kind of funny to me, you know. So, Begalia, after having Hydra seize control, is looking for legitimacy to be recognized by the United Nations as a world, as a state, an official world, official state, you know. And now with Zemo allegedly as his head of state, you know, they're looking to sort of be recognized. And the way they decide to do that, among other things, is they recruit the Mandarin, you know, to help out. He's going to be the public face of Begalia. He's their, you know, poster boy. And he's going to send him to the UN to capitalize on you know, what Hydra's been doing to try and secure power. They've been working behind the scenes to kind of get that together, you know. But just as a refresher course, Taser, do you kind of want to let people in on who the Mandarin is and what his power set is, kind of?
Yeah,
just a brief?
The Mandarin is an Imperial Chinese dictator who historically has gone up against Iron Man for a million fucking years. And to be fair, you know, holds his own, you know, usually against Iron Man, doing, you know, pretty well. And that's with all the various upgrades to his armor that he's had. At one point, I know Marvel had floated that the Mandarin had a son, and his name was, I think, Temujin, who...
That's Temborjigin or whatever the fuck his name is.
If I got it wrong, yeah, I got it wrong. But no, he had a chi power, so think Dragon Ball Z, you know, or some shit like that. And actually, I haven't heard from him in quite some time, so I don't know if they killed him off or, you know, they just, you know, forgot about him.
Oh, it's funny because he was actually killed off about 6-7 years ago by Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca. Yeah, they killed him off when they were doing Invincible Iron Man, and he got brought back in the interim. And spoiler alert, we'll just get right to the chase. Punisher shows up, and while the Mandarin is in the UN sort of negotiating, quote-unquote, which basically, you know, he's holding certain dignitaries from certain countries hostage, Frank kills the motherfucker.
Sniper shot.
Places a bullet right in him. Boom. Mandarin is dead in the middle of the UN.
But understand, this isn't a regular bullet. It's a green bullet, which means it's special. It's kryptonite.
I mean, I was thinking it could be some of the alien tech from which he crafted his rings of power, but hey, well, kryptonite could work too. Let's go with that.
I would actually like that. I would like it to be some type of alien tech. And maybe the only reason why this thing existed because they were putting Mandarin in the position that he was, so they needed something to control him or take him out in case he ever, you know, became too much the head or whatever. You know, they needed something to take him out quick. So this whole book, most of it was Frank going after that bullet just so he could take and kill Mandarin to stop the vote to keep Mandarin and Baron Zemo from being able to form their own country and be having it recognized by the UN and UN and NATO or whatever the fuck, which is funny. But when you actually get to the moment when the bullet comes in and you see it, it's like, shoo. And if you pay attention, it looks like Mandarin's not wearing any of his rings. When we first see him, he's got his rings on. When he's there in front of that podium, no rings. But anyway,
but to be fair though, He is somewhat of a genius like Tony Stark, so he could be upgrading his tech. Maybe the rings are just, you know, elsewhere. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it.
I would call closer than that, but we're talking the Mandarin and we're talking comics, so it's entirely possible. You know what? You know who's to say? But that being said, though, when you were looking at it, you see him see the bullet come, and he's got his force field up, and you see it start pushing through the force field, and you know, he's like, wait, what form of magic is this? And it's like, if I move, my shield will break. I can stop it. Not like this. So close to bow, you know. So it's hitting him in the eye, and yeah, that's it. It's the end of the Mandarin with a magic bullet.
It's and here's the thing too is that almost like
Tony Stark was Frank, there.
Yeah, here, you see the reactions of people like Tony Stark and who else is there?
Nick Fury. No,
you see the reactions
Flurry.
Of Black Widow, yeah. Nick Fury.
Yeah,
Zemo. Zemo is watching as well, obviously. But Frank's almost not even a presence throughout most of the book. He's not even really kind of there. Similar almost in tone, I think, to what who did the series a few years ago? The one that Iggy really liked. The one where he had like almost no dialogue throughout.
Not tell you.
Oh, God. All right, fair enough. Moving on. But he has that sort of thing where Punisher almost isn't really even a factor in his own story of the book, which is fine. You know, it works. Some of the better Punisher series have had that focus, you know, on the elements around Frank rather than Frank himself. So, but yeah. So, it's just, yeah, I mean, Punisher killed the Mandarin, which is totally, he's out of his weight class, you know? Like, again, if he went up to him straight, Punisher would be a stain on the ground. He'd be a scorch mark, you know? And whatever kind of crazy wackadoo super magic science BS they got going on in that Hydra lab is one thing, but I don't know, man. I mean, John was understandably upset, but he actually wanted to rant about it, you know, before we sent him on his mission to rescue Iggy from the villainous Walmart. But he's not here with us tonight. I mean, look. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I'm not really a Punisher guy, so I really don't care one way or the other. That's just me. But I mean, I thought it was a solid first issue. It's definitely an interesting step up for Frank in terms of who he can now conceivably threaten, you know?
Well, yeah, if he raids Roxxon for their super high-tech shit, sure, of course.
Which is another thing. I love seeing Dario Agger involved. Who was a hangover from Jason Aaron's Thor run. He's great. He's an actual Minotaur, so that's going to be another thing that might come up later on.
Oh, that guy. Right.
Yeah. That's the other dude, the Roxxon guy who they're hanging out with.
With the glasses, right. Yeah. I was trying to place him, and I was failing, but yeah, thank you for reminding me. Yeah.
That's Dario Agger, the Minotaur and head of Roxxon. So. But it's funny to me because, you know, like I said, Frank was almost a non-factor in his own book, and those are the books where the Punisher is almost best used. You know, where he's kind of just like skulking in the dark and moving around and doing his own thing. So for that reason, I actually kind of liked it more than I would like a Punisher book. You know, I thought it was a decent read. I won't continue with the series just basically because, like I said, the Punisher, even when he's at his most interesting, does not really hold my interest. So it's nothing really there for me. I will say that, holy shit, Matt Rosenberg is writing another fucking book. Jesus Christ, they've been putting this kid on everything. It's ridiculous. He's okay. He's all right. He's not the best writer. Here's the thing. I first knew about him back in the day. He did an indie miniseries for the publisher Black Mask called We Can Never Go Home. Mm. That was really fucking well done. And it suited him well. And any book he has that kind of has that same kind of tone works well. But I think they're putting this kid into the thick of it way too fast. I've thought about that when I first found out Marvel signed him. Because he only did that one miniseries that I know about, We Can Never Go Home, for Black Mask, before he got sniped up by Marvel and put into their you know, house of ideas. And I worry that they keep putting him on these things. Maybe it's stretching him a bit thin. Because the cracks in his writing are there. It shows. I've seen it. You know, this is even going back to when he first broke out in Marvel with Kingpin as part of Civil War II. He did a miniseries about the Kingpin. And, you know, you keep finding the things, because one thing he doesn't really get down, I think, is appropriate pacing. I think that's a big problem with him. Maybe
too
it's just
fast
me.
Or too slow, or he just just, you know, kind of all over the place with no...
Almost like parts get left out and then there's like a lack of connective tissue between parts. Because that was something I picked up on really much, really back when he'd worked on Kingpin. And maybe he's improved because I've been reading less and less of his stuff, but that's just because I've been reading less comics in general. But I worry about him being stretched too thin and being given too much because, you know, like I said, he's been in Marvel now for a few years. He only really had one or two credits under his belt as a legit comics guy, writer, before they snapped him up. But, I mean, like I said, this issue was well done, I think. And he does well when he can focus on that kind of thing. Because, you know, despite the super science magic pseudo shenanigans, this book is essentially about a street-level hero. And that's what We Can Never Go Home was about. That's what Kingpin focused on, which, despite its flaws, was a good read. And, again, despite its flaws here, I enjoyed The Punisher. So, you know, I guess that kind of puts me somewhere in the middle as far as what I thought of the series. But, you know, I'll give it 3 out of 5. Middle of the road for me. Nothing spectacular. But I was never going to be wooed by a Punisher book really anyway, you know? But that's just me, I guess. Taser, what are your closing summation thoughts, I guess, or what's your take on that?
I think I would mirror your estimation, not so much about the, you know, weakness or strength of the writer per se, but in regards to how they use Frank in this book. Frank is more or less a force that we see get unleashed here and there, but a lot of the exposition comes from basically the villains. And, you know, you're left trying to figure out exactly what the hell Frank's trying to do. He's just kind of going through people. He's cutting a swath. You know, that one page, which was a sequence of him, you know, in the elevator at Roxxon, and he's, each time the door opens, he's just killing people.
was great.
And, you know, each floor is just dead people, and he's collecting their guns. So you see the pile, you know, get bigger and bigger at his feet. That was fucking hilarious. But
that was pretty good.
Where we get to, and I have to say it, they wanted to take and make a big splash with the Punisher in this book, and well, what do we do? Well, let's get rid of somebody we're not using, you know, we haven't used in a while. Who haven't we used in a while? Okay, Mandarin. And that sounds a bit legit because I don't think Mandarin's shown up in Tony's book at all for a couple of years. You know?
Yeah, it's literally been, I think, the last time I remember him being a presence anywhere was when they killed him off 6 years ago when Matt Fraction was writing.
Oh, so, yeah, you know?
Time he was a major presence anyway. I mean, he could have been around, but I haven't read anything with him in it.
Yeah, so. I haven't read anything with the Mandarin in a solid decade, and I mean that. You know, but I, you know, my tastes with Marvel have, you know, really thinned, you know, due to various factors. That being said, they wanted to make, you know, Frank into a big story, big deal, and in the context of the Marvel universe, like, oh my God, look at what this guy done did. And look at who he took out. But as a comics fan, you can't help but sit there and go, wait, what? How did that work? You know, and you're not supposed to think that here. You're just supposed to go, ooh, he took out the Mandarin. Frank Castle is the man. But, you know, unless you're the type that just go, wow, awesomeness is awesomeness, I don't know if you can accept this, you know, simply at face value like that. I have to accept it because this is the story that we're given. But I keep waiting and thinking that, you know, 6-7 issues down the line, we come to find out that it's either a clone or an LMD or some shit. Or hell, the fact that the back of his head didn't get blown out because a bullet went into his eye. You know, something, you know. Because to take out a character who has the weight in the history of the Mandarin and then see him get kind of eliminated like this, that's, you know, disrespectful, kind of?
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, actually, a touch upon that, I think you're right, and I think that there is a time and a place for Frank Castle to be gunning people down, but he really belongs to the Marvel Underground. He shouldn't really... There was this is way, way, way back in the day. This is back when Wizard Magazine was still regularly printing issues. They announced there was a new Punisher series coming out. I think this is back when Punisher War Journals was getting off the ground again, either for the first time or after a brief respite. And they sat down with the writer and they pitched him scenarios at which he could conceive of Frank Castle trying to take these guys down within his own realms. And at one point he said someone threw him the name like Magneto. And the writer was smart enough to be like, yeah, he couldn't really kill Magneto unless he, like, directly interfered with, like, say, the magnetosphere of Earth's atmosphere. You'd have to kind of reverse. It wouldn't really work. Like, they pitched him these insane guys, and he kept saying, yeah, Frank's not really that kind of guy. I mean, he would have to pull off some crazy, crazy shit to get it done. And I think this is something that just barely tiptoes up to that line. Because, like I said, it's not completely inconceivable given what we see in the book, but it's not... It's just something doesn't sit right. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You know, for that matter, Magneto isn't somebody you assassinate with violence. Magneto is somebody you assassinate by poisoning his food.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
looking at what they've done with Magneto over the decades, it's like, yeah, approaching him is just like, forget about it. So let's just make everything within the next 5 miles, every food stuff available everywhere, poison.
Yeah, and again, that's not really me trying to argue like he could kill Magneto or he can't kill Magneto, because let's be like in his usual way, he can't kill Magneto. but it's just there are some characters, given who the Punisher is and what he can do conceivably, that he can't take on. Yeah. And even he knows this. There's a reason he sticks to mafiosos and street-level hoods when he lives in a world where people like Magneto and the Mandarin and Baron Zemo and Doctor Doom exist. Because he knows while he can't really take those guys out, he can focus his efforts elsewhere and take out the lesser scum. And on top of that, nobody's really going to notice or care if these lower-level guys get it, because there are big dudes who are threatening the world, and that's kind of the category Mandarin can fall into.
And not only that, but there's also people that are directly opposed to the Mandarin that Frank recognizes and is like, okay, well, this is neutralized by that, that's neutralized by this, so therefore I can focus on all these guys down here, you know, fucking up the neighborhood. So, I mean, that's why the Punisher works. Here, somebody's, you know, I mean, the writer, writer's clearly got big plans for him. Clearly got big plans for him, because holy fuck, that's fucking wow, man. Right, shit. Yeah.
So what's your final rating for this book then, Taser?
I'll give it 4.5 warriors for pure batshit craziness, but. That being said, I don't really see myself reading issue number 2. I think if you're a Punisher fan, you'll probably pick this up and you'll probably enjoy it. But I think if you're I don't even want to say balanced.
Yeah.
But I think it might be a stretch for anybody who's not already a Punisher fan. I'll leave it at that.
Gotcha. Fair enough. All right, then. Moving right along, right into individual reviews. We'll wrap up the show. We'll do a 1-2 punch. Taser, you want to go first with your book? Because it's mad chill vibes, bruh. So, dude. What's up?
Unfortunately, I decided
to pick... Hey, dude, don't talk like that, bro. Don't harsh my mellow, bruh. Yeah, come on,
another
bro.
Another one I don't think I'm reading issue number 2. West Coast Avengers with Hawkeye and Fuse and America and Gwenpool and Quentin Quire. Okay, so somebody went and just took up some names and threw them in a hat and said, make a team. And I that's what you came up with here.
That person was Kelly Thompson, by the way, if I'm not mistaken. She's the writer on the book.
Yeah, but I think somebody did that and then handed her the assignment. So I won't hold her responsible for this.
I don't know. She seemed very enthusiastic about it when she started pimping out the book solicitation. So
that's because she's getting paid for it.
Fair enough.
Either way.
Fair enough.
So basically, Hawkeye with boobs is having an issue with land sharks out in Santa Monica.
Her name is Kate Bishop, and I hate her, but go ahead.
Hawkeye with boobs is having an issue out in Santa Monica, and she calls in Hawkeye without boobs. And she calls
Clint Barton.
Hawkeye without boobs. And she calls in Super Lesbian for backup help to handle land sharks, which goes off and shows how Hawkeye with boobs can come up with a plan that doesn't necessarily get everybody killed. So, yay, leader potential!
Sure.
And since there's no team out in California, and immediately that made me think of the post-Civil War stuff when Tony was running the Superhuman Hero Agency shit, and there was a team in every state. You know, like, wasn't there a team out in California? But, you know, yeah, that was all done away with, unfortunately. So, yeah, she decides to put a team together with her boyfriend, Super Lesbian, Hawkeye without boobs, Gwenpool, who I have nothing on. I don't read shit with her.
Oh, I can explain that, Taser.
Okay.
Gwenpool was based on a design done by a cosplayer that got so popular they made her a comic book. There you
go.
That's
your name. Oh, okay.
Yes. I am not even bullshitting you a little bit. There was a really popular cosplayer on the convention circuit who came up with this concept of Gwen Stacy Deadpool. And she got so popular, they started working her into little one-off stories, like a holiday special, I think, variant covers. And eventually they decided they gave her own book, and that's how she came to be. So there's nothing for you to really know. There's nothing for you to know except for she's Gwen Stacy Deadpool, which I don't even know how that works. I never bothered to read up on her, but it's I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like, you know, Marvel has decided to go... They went from no Gwen Stacy at all to two types of Gwen Stacy that have nothing to do with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Gwenpool and Gwen Spider, or whatever the fuck they call her. And
Gwenpool, yeah.
Okay, yeah, and it's just like, that's both funny and fucked up at the same time to me, because I'm an old man. But that being the case, and Quentin Quire, dickhead supreme of the mutant verse.
God, he's
next
an
to
asshole.
Namor.
Even Wolverine hates him. And Wolverine usually likes most people.
You know. So, long story short, and Fuse, who is a dude who's got earrings and tattoos, and he has Absorbing Man's powers. Minus the wrecking ball, the chain ball thing. Yeah, and they want to make a team. And the thing... I actually wouldn't have a problem with this, but if I remember correctly, isn't Hawkeye operating out of the Midwest?
He's kind of a nomad at this point, not the nomad character, but his last book was Occupy Avengers, which was basically him going from town to town, just kind of looking for trouble, almost like that Wandering Monk show with like David Carradine or some bullshit. So he didn't really have a set base of operations. He was kind of just trolling around wherever. But
I thought it was Midwest centered.
Sure, yeah, and it is, because I know they started off with a run in Chicago where Nighthawk was still a thing there from the Squadron Supreme. And, other Midwest towns. But I do also know... yeah. I do know that at the end of Kelly Thompson's Kate Bishop Hawkeye run, she had Hawkeye show up, and he was just kind of hanging out there. So he's been in California with her for a minute. So that's...
You know,
that's
I'm happening. Actually waiting for the scene when, the two of them end up kissing or something. Because he's been around her way too much. She's too involved in his... romantic, you know, failures, and I'm waiting to see something happen, because look at how Marvel writes their stories nowadays. They're more interpersonal and character based than, well, let's deal with the issue at hand and what alien is coming to kick Earth's ass now. That being said, this book reads like MTV. It reads like a show based on MTV with the whole confessional.
The real world.
Yes.
West Coast.
Exactly. That's exactly what this reads like. They have
the real world. Title sequence. Title. The opening number. I'm doing that. Hell yeah. Real world. Sorry. Editorial. Ben,
world.
If you're listening.
There you go.
Ben, if you're listening to this, just delete it and it'll be fine. Or Ben or Taser, if you're editing this. Someone editorialize and take this out of the sequence. Editor's note. Remove this bit. But go ahead.
So yeah, they have confessionals and they, you know, they have Gwenpool comment on saving Quentin Quarry's butt when he gets his butt kicked by a 200-foot-tall tigra.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know. I don't know.
I neither do I. But and also, apparently, they're all living out of Kate Bishop's house, and they've got funding by the people who were following Quentin Quire around, but they haven't gotten paid yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's more typical modern Marvel, and it's an attempt at revitalizing the West Coast Avengers with the modern Marvel mindset, and I'm not touching issue number 2. That being said, I did have some fun with this book, but it's I am clearly not the target audience. I'm so clearly not the target audience.
Yeah.
If I had to give it a rating, I'd give it like a 4. A 4 Warriors out of 5, because it was fun, but really? Yeah, I am not touching number 2. Just no. Not happening.
But
and
Taser,
it was good art. It was good art. You know, this
Taser.
Decent. Yo.
What about BroDoc? Oh. Bro?
See, I was trying to avoid him.
I'm not letting you avoid him. We gotta talk about BroDoc, bro.
Okay. So while trying to deal with the 200-foot Tigra, who doesn't remember Clint and is tossing away Carnival Cruise Line ship.
Sure.
They realize that, well, Quentin Quire is not up to snuff in this regard, so how are we going to deal with this? And then Bruh shows up. And this Bruh is BroDoc, who I'm not even reading what the abbreviation means. Suffice to say, they make a BroDoc who's basically got the surfer bod, long blonde hair, eyes with no pupils in it. He plants one on Kate, who doesn't really fight back with her boyfriend right there. Doesn't really fight back. And he basically makes a declaration that he's going to save them all. And yay, yay, yay. Woo,
but
BroDoc.
Don't you want to know what the acronym stands for?
No, I don't.
Because I know what it stands for.
Please, Bri, please tell us what the acronym stands for.
BroDoc stands for Biorobotic Organism Designed Overwhelmingly for Kissing. That, ladies and gentlemen, was West Coast Avengers number 1. Moving
like I
right
said,
along.
I'm not touching issue number 2. It's not happening.
Right. Right. Moving right along then to round things out and close it out. I'll be doing a review of Marvel 2-in-1 featuring The Thing and the Human Torch. It's issue number 8. This picks up after they got dumped on this world where it was completely fucking insane. Spider-Man is some sort of insane dictator, and Dr. Doom and Rachna Cole, a scientist who was using Johnny and Ben's search for the Fantastic Four for her own means, which was to locate a version of her sister where, you know, her sister in the Prime Universe was brain dead. Once she was found out, she tried to flee. Dr. Doom got caught in her teleportation because she had the means to jump from universes, basically stranding Johnny and Ben in this universe where Spider-Man is this mad dictator and it's like Armageddon-ish. So, yeah, that's where we are. This picks up a few weeks after the last issue. Johnny and Ben are just basically acclimating to the thought of having to live in this world for a little while. Johnny is kind of doing his own thing. Ben's working. Where is he working? I think he's working in like a mine or something, or a power plant, something to that effect, you know, blue collar stuff. But one thing I will say is that Ben is in human form here. He's not his rocky, craggy self. And he was rocky and craggy, and he was the thing in the last issue. They didn't really explain what happened. However, if I had to assume, it's probably tied to the fact that they were losing their powers over the course of the series. You know, but he is effectively human here, as is Johnny. And they've been consorting with Amadeus Cho, the version of Amadeus Cho in this universe, trying to send out a signal to the Fantastic Four, or who Johnny thinks, you know, Johnny thinks Reed and Sue are still alive, and Ben is pretty convinced they're dead. So he's trying to get Amadeus Cho to send out a multidimensional signal to lure Scott, or not Scott, Reed and Sue to that world to save them. And then they can be reunited. However, secretly, Ben also tells him to allow a wider search for the Avengers because he knows Reed and Sue aren't going to come. One way or the other, he knows they won't answer the call. So, Johnny intercepts a phone call from Amadeus to Ben, wherein he tells him that he widened the search to the Avengers, and Johnny gets really upset. Finally confronts Ben, he says, "They're dead, aren't they?" And this is the moment where Johnny kind of loses hope. And the whole point of the series was that Ben kept feeding Johnny this false hope that they were alive so that it would keep his hopes up, keep him from trying to, like, kill himself or hurt himself, to try to get him back to where he was. And this is kind of that last straw breaking the camel's back, where he starts laying into Ben, cursing him out. Ben tries to talk him down, but they fight. And Johnny demands that he fight back, and Ben won't do it because he feels bad enough for what Johnny did. But they're basically stuck here for the time being, and they're trying to make their peace with the fact that, you know, now he was depressed, but, you know, I was lost, but you shouldn't have lied to me like that, you know, and Ben apologizes for it, but, you know, they're basically just kind of stuck at their lowest point. This is where I think their lowest point is, because they're without their powers. Both of them now know that Reed and Sue are nowhere to be found, or at least they can't access them, and they're pretty consigned to dying on some sort of foreign universe. And the issue ends, there's a radio report early on in the issue where it says the Spider-Man's foot soldiers are looking for Johnny and Ben because they messed up this gladiatorial battle he had lined up, and they killed, a sorcerer who was working for Peter. I think it was Stephen Strange, actually. I don't know what the thinking was behind this world, but it's really fucked up. So Stephen Strange was kind of Peter Parker's magical, you know, sheriff, almost like to what Doom was in Secret Wars, you know, kind of that dynamic.
Okay.
And Dr. Doom, who is still playing the good guy at this point, last issue was able to kill Stephen Strange.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So Peter Parker or Spider-Man, whoever the hell it is, wants Ben and Johnny dead. So we also find out that Ben frequents a diner nearby his work where the waitress there has a crush on him. And, you know, he's toying with the idea of settling down. And at the last page, he's opening for business. And she tells him they're not open yet. People come up and ask if she's, you know, if she could talk to them. And she says she's busy. They're getting ready to open. And he goes, and the person who was talking to her goes, "No, it's okay. We have some time to kill." And you pan out, and it's a team of people wearing the classic Fantastic Four uniforms. You have a girl engulfed in blue flame, a giantess who is covered in seemingly golden skin. A typical bald-headed bruiser-looking guy, smaller than the golden-skinned woman, but reasonably large. And they're spearheaded by the Mad Thinker. The nickname for them right now is called the Mad Four. We don't know anything about the other three, but we know they're fronted by the Mad Thinker. And they're the ones who are looking for Reed and Johnny in this world. They work Ben for Spider-Man. Yeah, excuse me, Ben and Johnny. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where that issue ends.
You said that this was the last issue.
No, did I? Well, I meant the last issue was in the most recent one to come out.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough.
No, yeah, the story is still ongoing. But this is this is building up, I think, to the final end of this story arc in this book, and that will ultimately segue into Fantastic Four. Because see, that's the thing. We talked about it last week, or, you know, last time the show aired, but Fantastic Four coming out at the same time as this kind of throws the timeline out of whack a little bit. But we know that Reed and Johnny make it back to Earth. We know their powers are restored, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, they think they're stuck here and they're depowered, and we don't know what's going to happen. So, that having been said, I mean, Chip Zdarsky writes as solid an issue as he ever does. The only thing I'll say about it that changed from last issue is that it's not Jim Chung doing the, or was it Jim Chung doing the interiors? It was, right? He was doing the interior work, I think. Instead, it's Ramon Perez this time around.
Ramon!
Ramon Perez, most recently, to my knowledge, did a run on Hawkeye where he did these beautiful watercolor illustrations and stuff. Ooh. And the illustrations aren't as good here. It's actually kind of jarring. It's not the best. I blame more the color artist Federico Blee, because when he had the proper colorist and when he was able to do it in his style, the story was beautifully illustrated. You know, that Hawkeye run, it's not my favorite because it split focus, but the artwork was beautiful on that. So for him to do this art and for it not to be as good as a step down in my book from Jim Chung. So that having been said, wasn't a bad read. We are definitely building towards something. However, they still have to cover where Dr. Doom ended up with that scientist Rachna, and they have to cover what's going to happen with the Mad Thinker stumbles upon Ben and Johnny. So
let me ask you this. Do you think this one storyline will cover the first year of Marvel 2-in-1? You think it'll go a full 12?
I think it will. I think, honestly, that might have been their intention from the jump, because they could easily squeeze another few issues out of this, even if they do, like, issues picking up, like, an epilogue type thing. I think it'll span the first 12 issues. That would be a nice round number, I think, for them to wrap things up with. Okay. So, but I'll keep you guys updated on that. But for right now, I mean, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5. Probably would have rated it 4.5 if it was Jimmy Chung on the interiors. The story, it's not as engaging as the previous stuff has been, but the artwork itself takes it down another notch as well because it's not as clean or as, you know, it's not as vibrant with the series as I would have liked. So I'll leave it at that. Yeah, and that's our show, I guess. That's it for us. We are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast on all the things, all the social medias. We are on the Facebook group, the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a news aggregator, which means what, Taser?
We steal the stories.
We steal the articles and stories and stream them to you in one solid news feed. So we keep all the bullshit out of there. We try to keep the conversation going, and we think we do a halfway decent job. So we're over there at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We're also on MightyWarriors3.wordpress.com, which is where all the episodes get posted. We're on iTunes at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Rate us favorably. Leave a kind word in reviews. We would most definitely appreciate it. I'm over on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That's NO_MR_POWERS.
That's a mouthful, Taser, folks. That's
yeah, it is. It's an outdated reference from like 20 years ago, but I'm still sticking to it. But yeah, so Taser, what do you got to plug?
I said Christy Yamaguchi last time.
You did.
So I'll say Ming-Na Wen this time. Also, ooh, I would like to say thank you to all the different people who've been actually taking a look at it, at all the articles we've been stealing and posting on our page. You know, Rich, Pedro, Jamie.
Oh, wow. He's got names, folks.
Tracy.
I think I've seen a Tracy in there.
Yes, we have. And a few of them, they've been there a while. And I know I've forgotten a few of you guys, so it's nothing personal. I just have a very shitty memory. But I have seen quite a few names that have shown up fairly often. We just want to take the time out and say thank you for giving us, you know, the attention and the love. If I could have posted the porno stuff, I would have. Just want you to know that. But, you know, either way, thank you very much. You know, it's good to see that you guys are responding. And for Iggy and old John, they're out there somewhere. I know Iggy has the thing, and he does the thing on the Twitter, the thing. And John, he also does some Twitter thing, and the thing.
Yeah. John, I'm confusing my old men. You can find John at Gamera Sith, GameraSith. He's over there on Twitter.
Yeah, that's
Benny Boy can be found at at Marvelous Iggy, MARVEL OUS. Is that how you spell Marvelous? I forget.
I was going to put an ING in there.
Yeah, Marvelous Iggy. But yeah, he's over there on Twitter. You can find him as well.
Yeah,
he shares
thing.
A lot of. He can take care of all of his other own plugs when he gets back on the show, guys.
Yeah, and so. Twitch TV and probably YouTube and I think X Videos.
Yeah, Pornhub.
Yeah, and don't forget Ant-Man 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that stuff.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation's list of wanted criminals. That's definitely one where you could find him at. You know.
You know, running away from ICE every now and again because they don't believe him. You know.
Indeed. You can find him on the Burger King website, where you can also find John John. He's there screaming at Iggy, who is a customer, so it's actually kind of really cathartic for them to, you know.
Actually, I heard that they were going to be in a burger competition where John John represented Burger King and Iggy represented Whataburger, and they were going to go head-to-head in a patty-making contest.
Oh,
now,
my
how
Lord.
That was supposed to play out, I don't know, but I heard it was supposed to involve the sumo gear.
Interesting.
Know.
It'll probably take place at the next halftime show of the next Texas Alabama Oklahoma game. So,
that
you know,
will
be
worth watching.
That would definitely be something to check out, folks. But for now, we're gonna leave you with that thought in mind, and we're gonna hope we have a full compliment next week, the couple weeks, but we shall see.
And they'll be all oiled up and everything, sexy.
Yeah. We got the sexy geisha girls running around too. It's gonna be so dope. But in the meantime, for the Mighty Warriors Team Rebel Podcast, I'm Bri, the newsboy, a.k.a. News Bitch. That's Taser over there, your Ridge New Yorker. Say goodbye to the folks, Taser.
Goodbye, folks, Taser.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. Stay marvelous.
No, we don't. It's a lie. It's a lie. Get out while you can!
Hey, don't lie to them. What's wrong? Get over here, you!
No! No!